Napoleon wasn't short. He was 5'7", which at the time was taller than average. The rumor that he was a teeny tiny man was just a piece of British war propaganda.
Napoleon's true Waterloo was mean people.
It's not true that humans only use 10% of our brains. No study has ever shown or even claimed that. It's just something people say for no reason.
Yeah, it turns out the whole brain is important.
No matter what your drunk cousin Dave tells you, there's no such thing as cow tipping, because cows sleep lying down.
Well, then, what have I been getting drunk and knocking down then?
Mom! Oh, come on, I'm sorry!
Touching baby birds doesn't make their mothers reject them. Mamas love their babies. That's right. You could have saved that bird you saw when you were 10. You let it die. George Washington didn't have wooden teeth. His actual dentures were made of gold, lead, hippopotamus bones, and donkey teeth.
Ha! Wood. How pedestrian.
There is no medical reason to drink 8 glasses of water a day. Sorry, stoners, undercover cops don't have to tell you they're cops just because you ask them. Cops are allowed to lie. That's not a thing.
Whoa, wait. So are you a cop?
I'm not. Come on.
But like, you could be a cop.
Nah, I'm not.
Vikings didn't wear horns on their helmets, and the Iron Maiden never existed. It was a hoax that was made up in the 19th century.
Yeah! Fake! Fake!
George Washington Carver didn't invent peanut butter. Thomas Crapper didn't invent the toilet, and Al Gore never claimed he invented the internet. Albert Einstein didn't fail high school math.
Of course I freaking didn't. I was the greatest scientist of all time.
The Great Wall of China is not visible from space.
Yeah, every astronaut looks, and none of us have ever seen it. But hey, why listen to us? We're only astronauts.
Not to mention, if you were ever thrown out of an airlock... you wouldn't explode. In fact, you could survive up to 30 seconds before you ran out of oxygen and lost consciousness. So, here's a question. If none of these things are true, then why do we all believe them? Simple, because they all tell good stories. But that doesn't make it true. And nothing is more important than the truth.
Beforehand, and are any of those stuck in your brain from when you were younger and you learned them? One of them, the Great Wall of China one, that one was interesting to me because people actually started that rumor 300 years before space travel was invented. They were already saying it was the only thing on Earth that could be seen from space. That rumor is hundreds of years old. I think that's really cool. Welcome. If this is your first time here, we are glad to have you with us. My name is Pastor Kyle, and we are in the book of John. If you want to follow along and you didn't bring a Bible with you this morning, please feel free to use the one in the pew in front of you. If you do not own a Bible, feel free to take that Bible as a gift from us. With that said, we will have all the verses we're going over on the screen, so you can follow along on there if you prefer. But with that, we are going to jump into the book of John. But to bring you up to speed to where we've been so far, since we are finishing chapter 8 this morning, we have seen that the main point in the book of John is this, that Jesus is God. And we said that right on week 1, and we said that John ultimately tells us that this is his point when he gets to chapter 20. But if you have been following along with us, you know that this is pretty evident from the way that John has been speaking so far in the book. He kind of has a real axe to grind on this one. In fact, I was just talking with Pat before the service. I don't understand how anyone could make the claim that Jesus never claimed to be God if they have ever read the book of John. You have to almost take the book of John out of Scripture if you want to say that Jesus never claimed to be God. He does it all the time. We're going to see him do it yet again today. He's going to make it very clear that when he was here, he believed himself to be one and the same as the God of the universe. We saw that he came and he interacted with this world to change everything that had come up to that point. We saw this primarily through his conversation with Nicodemus, where Nicodemus came to him looking for just another piece of information, something to make him smarter, something to make him better than the rest of the Pharisees. And Jesus said, yeah, that's not what I'm here for. I'm not just adding to what has come before. We are shifting the paradigm entirely. We are going in a whole new direction. And he starts laying that out. And then over the last few weeks, we've been discussing this concept of who is Jesus to you? This question gets asked a lot in the book of John. Who is Jesus? And what is it that you want from him? What is it that you are looking for from him? Because as Jesus is laying out who he is, as John keeps asking this question of who is Jesus, Jesus makes it very clear that he is here for a purpose. He is on a mission. He is headed towards his hour, the hour that is not yet come, but the hour that is now come. As Jesus talks through the book, he is headed in a direction, but the people who see him, the people who interact with him, have been seeing what they want to see. They've been seeking what they want to seek. And Jesus keeps trying to correct them, to redirect them, to say, no, that's not what I'm here for. In fact, he has said things and done things that make the people who are seeking to follow him very uncomfortable. In fact, many of them have left following him at this point. They have stopped being disciples because the things he said have made them uncomfortable. And just a point of clarification on this one, because I've been saying it week in and week out as we've hit our review section, what I am not saying is that Jesus came to make your life hard. See, it's really easy for us, especially in our American culture, to hear uncomfortable and think difficult, to make it hard, that I need to do a lot more things. I need to fill my life with more actions, more works, more activity. But Jesus actually says that when he comes, his burden is going to be easy and his yoke is going to be light. He is not coming to make our lives more difficult, but it also means it won't be comfortable because Jesus is calling us to accept his truth rather than the truth we sometimes want to hear. And we saw last week as Scott preached, and Scott did a fantastic job last week. If you didn't see that, I highly recommend you hit our YouTube channel and check it out. I especially love the Brennan Manning quote that he shared. I will double down on both of his recommendations. If you have not read Unoffendable or Ragamuffin Gospel, they are both very good reads. I would highly recommend them, and they're both available in audio format if you prefer to listen to your books rather than read them on paper. But we saw last week as Scott preached that Jesus had no problem confronting sin. He called sin, sin, but he did it with compassion. He did it with understanding. He did it with grace, as we saw the story of the woman caught in adultery, and Scott handled that for us last week. And now we're going to finish up the chapter 8 in John, and it starts like this. So Jesus said to the Jews who had believed him. If you weren't here last week, that is going to be a weird place to start. But last week, as Scott wrapped up his sermon, the last verse that we looked at ended with, and some of them believed. After seeing what Jesus had done, after hearing what Jesus said, some of the Jews started to believe that he was who he said he was. So to those who had believed in him, Jesus said this, if you abide in my word, you are truly my disciples, and you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. They answered him, we are offspring of Abraham and have never been enslaved to anyone. So how is it that you say you will become free? This set of verses, especially this segment right here in the middle, is quoted consistently. It's quoted in churches. It's quoted about churches. But it is also quoted by the world. In fact, I know many scientists who talk about this verse in the concept of the truth will set you free. As long as we look for truth, if we find truth, truth is the thing that will set us free. But if you read this, that is not what Jesus is saying here. Not all truth will set you free. That's not what he said. What he says is his truth will set us free. Now, I am not preaching against truth. I consider myself a scientist as far as how I think, how I act, and how I experiment and test theories. I love truth. I want to pursue truth in all its forms. It's just not what Jesus is talking about here. So we need to see this as Jesus originally said. What he says is, if you abide in my word, if you listen to my teaching, if you follow me, if you stay committed to the teachings that I am giving you, he says, then you are truly my disciples. Makes sense, right? If you want to be a follower of somebody, you have to accept what they say is true. If I say that I'm a follower and I am not willing to follow, that doesn't make a lot of sense. So he says, if you abide in my word, if you're following me, you are truly my disciples, and you will know the truth. Jesus here is talking about himself. In the other Gospels, and I believe later on in John, he says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. He is referencing himself as the truth. And he says, and the truth, he, Jesus, will set you free. And they answered him, we are the offspring of Abraham. We've got to hang on to this phrase, because this phrase is what Jesus is going to build the rest of his argument here. And this time, I mean it both in the sense of creating an argument for debate, but also argument. This is about to go downhill fast with these Jewish believers. They are not going to like what Jesus says next, and Jesus just keeps going. Because he already told them, look, you'll be set free. And their response is, we're children of Abraham. We're not slaves to anybody. Who are you to tell us we need to become free? So Jesus answers and he says, truly, truly, I say to you, everyone who practices sin is a slave to sin. Pause. Everyone who practices sin is a slave to sin. Who practices sin? Everyone. So who is a slave to sin? Everyone. Everyone is equally broken. This is something we've been talking about ever since we looked at Romans months ago. Everyone who practices sin, everyone, is a slave to sin. And the slave does not remain in the house forever. The son remains forever. So if the son sets you free, you will be free indeed. I know that you are offspring of Abraham. Yet you seek to kill me because my word finds no place in you. I speak of what I have seen with my father, and you do what you have heard from your father. So what he's saying is, every single one of them, everyone who is listening to Jesus, he's saying, yes, you are a slave. No, you are not free. Yes, you do need what I'm offering you, because without it, you are still a slave to sin. And then he draws this further on this slave analogy, because he says, look, you're slaves. Slaves don't stay in the house forever. Because they're there to serve, and then they get kicked back out. They get sent back to the slave's quarter. They get sent back to their own. But the son, the one who lives in the house, the one who is part of the family, he gets to stay forever. He never gets kicked out of the house. He's like, so if the son, referring to himself, sets you free, the thing that he has just said he is offering, his truth, his teaching, himself, if he sets you free, you're free, because he's part of the family. He has the authority to do that. He says, I know that you're offspring of Abraham. I know where you think your heritage lies. He says, and yet you're seeking to kill me. You are proving to me that you are not living like children of Abraham. He says, I speak of what I have seen with my father, and you do what you have heard from your father. He says, you claim to be children of Abraham. You claim to be descendants of Abraham, the one who lived by faith, the one who believed what God revealed to him. I'm telling you, the way you're acting makes it very clear you don't. You don't live the way he did. You are not like him. In fact, he's not your father. He doubles down on this in a second. They answered him, Abraham is our father. And Jesus says, if you were Abraham's children, you would be doing the works that Abraham did. Makes sense. But now you seek to kill me. A man who has told you the truth that I hear from God, that I heard from God. This is not what Abraham did. You were doing the works your father did. Have you ever been in an argument with somebody like this? Where you say something and they go, yeah, no. You're like, no, really. It's true. It is absolutely true. And they're like, nope. Like, no, I can show you all the ways it's true. I can show you all the evidence. And this is true. And because of this is true, this is true. And they go, No. Like, how are you not getting this? I'm showing you all the evidence. This is evidence-based truth. Capital T, this is real. And they're like, no. Yeah, exactly. It's an argument with a three-year-old. He's like, Abraham's not your father. And they're like, no, we just told you, Jesus. We just made it clear to you, Jesus. We showed you our entire family tree, our heritage, everywhere we came from. We are children of Abraham. And Jesus goes, no, you're not. And here's how I know. If you were actually a child of Abraham, if you were actually a follower and doing the things that Abraham did, you would be acting like he did. But you're not. You seek to kill me, the man who told you truth that I heard from God. When Abraham heard truth from God, Abraham responded in obedience. Abraham responded in faith. When he heard from God, he responded with submission. When they heard truth from God, when they had God himself standing in front of them, telling them the things that God the Father had sent him to share, they responded by trying to kill him. He says, this isn't what Abraham did. You are doing the works of your father. Now they're getting mad. They say to him, we were not born of sexual immorality. We have one father, even God. And they're like, fine, if it's not Abraham, it's God. God's our father. He's even bigger than Abraham. And Jesus says to them, if God were your father, you would love me. For I come from God, and I am here. I come not of my own accord, but he sent me. Why do you not understand what I say? It's because you cannot bear to hear my word. I really was tempted to put the Jack Nicholson clip here. You can't handle the truth. Because Jesus is like, you can't even bear to hear the truth that I'm sharing with you. He's like, you double down. You say Abraham's your father, and I show you that clearly he's not your father. You're like, well, then God's our father. And he's like, well, going bigger on your claim doesn't make you any more right. In fact, it just makes it more clear that you're wrong. If the reason you're not a child of Abraham is because you're not responding when God revealed truth to Abraham, you're not responding the way Abraham did. Well, if God was your father, that would mean you were getting the information directly from him, and you're still not reacting any differently. You're still rebelling against the truth that God wanted to share with you because you want to kill me. If God were your father, you would love me because that's where I came from. Because he's my father, because he's the one who sent me with this message for you to hear, and you can't even understand it. He says, your father is the devil. You are of your father, the devil. And your will is to do your father's, the devil's, desires. He, your father, the devil, was a murderer from the beginning and does not stand in truth because there is no truth in him. When he lies, he speaks out of his own character. For he, your father, the devil, is a liar and the father of lies. But because I tell the truth, you do not believe me. Which one of you convicts me of sin? If I tell the truth, why do you not believe me? Whoever is of God hears the words of God. The reason why you do not hear them is that you are not of God. Jesus is done. Like, he is laying it down hard. He's like, yeah, no, Abraham's not your dad. God is not your father. Satan is your father. He pulls no punches here. He said, how do I know? By looking at what you do. He's like, I reveal to you truth, you respond with murder. I respond to you I give you a message from God, you call me a liar. He's like, everything you're doing is showing me your character, and your character matches only one person, Satan. He's like, if you were from God, you would hear me. The fact that you don't hear me tells me exactly who your father is. Man, if this didn't make them mad. Like, this, remember, he is standing in the middle of the temple. He's been there for a festival, the Feast of Lights. Sorry, Festival of Booths. Feast of Lights comes next. That's where we're going. But he's at the Feast of Tabernacles. He is surrounded by people who want him dead. Like, we just saw that the fact that they've already tried to kill him once. They've tried to trap him so they can kill him again. He is not standing in a friendly crowd. And this is what he tells them. Jesus was more than willing to make people uncomfortable with the truth, to make them face reality. And the Jews answered him, "Are we not right in saying that you are a Samaritan and have a demon?" Which, hear that the way they would have meant it. They are now resulting to insults. Like, this has now become personal. The Samaritan is like the worst thing you could say to a Jew. Like, this would be the equivalent of using language that I will not use from the stage in a name-calling battle with Jesus. Like, they are mad. And they're saying he has the demon. Remember, we said he has used this phrase a couple of times. They're saying to him, "You are a crazy person. You're acting like you're out of your mind." And Jesus answers them, "I do not have a demon. That is not true. But I honor my Father, and you dishonor me. Yet I do not seek my own glory. There is one who seeks it, and he is the judge." Jesus is saying, "I'm not crazy. I'm telling you the truth. I am here to honor my Father, the one who sent me, the one who gave me this message that I am here to share with you." And he says, "Yet I don't care that you're calling me names. I don't care that you're taking this personally. I don't care that you're choosing to make this an attack, a personal attack, rather than talking about the actual issues." He says, "That doesn't bother me at all, because I'm not here to seek my own glory. It's not about me," Jesus says. "It's about my Father, the one who sent me, and the message he sent me to give you." Which, ironically, makes it about him. But he's not seeking his own glory. He says, "But there is one who seeks it." This is Jesus' little warning here at the end. There is one who seeks Jesus' glory. You know who that is? God the Father. That's what he's been saying all along here. He is not here seeking his own glory, but God the Father is seeking for Jesus to be glorified. He is seeking for Jesus to be raised up to the position he belongs in. And after his death, burial, resurrection, that will happen. Philippians chapter 2 talks about that. He says, "Yet, I don't seek my own glory. There is one who seeks it, and you better be careful. Because if the one who seeks it is God the Father, the one who judges, the one who's in charge, the one who gets to make all the calls, if he's seeking my glory and you're dishonoring me, it's not me you're going to answer to. It's him." So he's throwing this out as a little warning. He's like, "Look, I'm not here to seek my own glory, but you better be careful, because the one who does is big, and he is going to get his way." "Truly, truly," he says, "I say to you, if anyone keeps my word, he will never see death." And the Jews said to him, "Now we know that you have a demon. Now we know you're crazy. Abraham died, as did the prophets. And yet you say, if anyone keeps my word, he will never taste death. Are you greater than our father Abraham, who died? And the prophets who died? Who do you make yourself out to be?" Remember, John asks this question consistently. The Jews are asking this of Jesus, but John is asking this of you. Who is Jesus? The crowd is asking Jesus, "Who are you? Who do you think you are?" And Jesus answers, "If I glorify myself, my glory is nothing. It is my Father who glorifies me, of whom you say he is our God." The God that you claimed as your father, that guy, that's who we're talking about. "But you have not known him." He says, "But I know him. If I were to say that I do not know him, I would be a liar like you." Ouch. "But I do know him, and I keep his word. Your father Abraham, the one you claimed was your father, rejoiced that he would see my day. He saw it, and he was glad. What he's saying is, you claim that God was your father. I know him. We're close. I know that you don't know him, but I do. In fact, he says, for me to not know him, for me to say to you that I don't know God, that I was not in God's presence, that I was not one with the Father, if I was to say that to you, Jesus says, I'd be a liar just like you. I said, but I can't say that, because I do, and I was, and I am. He says, or Abraham, the other guy you claimed was your father, yeah, he wished he could live to see me. He would have rejoiced that he would have been able to live long enough to see me. He heard of it. He saw it. It was presented to him by God that this day was coming, that the day of Jesus was coming. And he was glad just to know that one day the Messiah would come. He was glad for it. And they're starting to pick up on what he's saying. So the Jews said to him, you are not yet 50 years old. You're not even 50. And you've seen Abraham? Like, he's been dead for thousands of years. You're not even 50 years old. How is it possible that you have seen Abraham? And Jesus says to them, truly, truly, I say to you, before Abraham was, I am. So they picked up stones to throw at him, and Jesus hid himself and went out of the temple. It is so important that we understand what Jesus is saying here. They have claimed Abraham as their father. He has said that Abraham is not your father, the devil is your father. But he has said, I know the Father, I know God. And in fact, I even know that Abraham guy. And they're like, how could you possibly have known Abraham? You're not old enough. And he's like, well, I was around before him. I existed before him because I am. This is not just a typical I am. If you've studied this passage, you probably have already heard this at some point in your life, but if not, let me be the one to tell you. This I am is Jesus' claim to be God. He is saying, I existed before Abraham did because I am God. He uses the It's a series of four Jewish letters, the Tetragrammatron. Fun word, that's the only reason I wanted to say it. Tetragram, it sounds like a transformer. But it's a series of four Hebrew letters that we do not know the pronunciation for because we do not know what vowels went in between those letters. We all have guesses at it. But when the Jewish people talk about that phrase, that set of four letters, it is, well, one, they won't actually pronounce it. They'll skip it in Scripture, or they will replace it with the word Lord, but it is meant to be the name of God. That's what Jesus uses here. And what John is inviting us to do is to come and see the Jew that precedes Abraham. Because Jesus was a Jewish man, and all of the Jews found their roots, found their history, found their nationality from this man, Abraham. And what John is inviting us to do and what Jesus is claiming here is, I was one of you. I was part of this Jewish family before Abraham even existed. You're not getting your heritage from him. You're getting it from me. Because I am God. And if you don't believe me, believe them. Because they get so mad when he makes that claim. When he says, I am, they pick up stones to throw at him. And it doesn't mean that they're tossing the stones back and forth like playing catch. They were going to throw big stones really hard at his head. They wanted him dead. So Jesus hid himself and went out of the temple. They were going to stone him to death because they understood he was claiming to be the God of the universe. And everything he just said about the devil being their father and their reaction to truth being to bring about murder, they live out in verse 59. They prove that he was right. Which brings me to my question. So what? A great story. Wonderful to see Jesus claim to be God. But how does that affect me living in Genesee and Wyoming County in 2024? Well, when we are more focused on being right than listening to truth, it leads us to some pretty dark places. When we're more focused on being the one in the room who is right, instead of being able to listen to and assess truth when it is found in Scripture, it can lead us to some dark places. For these Jews, it led them to the point that they were about to murder a guy because they were so angry about hearing something that made them question what they believed. See, Jesus was offering them truth. And instead of accepting the truth that he was giving, instead of seeking the truth that he was sharing, they preferred their tradition, thinking, no, we're children of Abraham. We're okay. That's all we need. As long as we're children of Abraham, we're okay. We don't need to do anything different. We don't need to hear anything different. They were so focused on their tradition that they were missing the truth, and it was leading to them to the point that they were willing to murder him over it. So what are you holding on to? What is it that I'm holding on to? What are we holding on to that is keeping us from hearing what Jesus wants us to hear? What is the thing that I hold so strongly that I am unwilling to consider that it could possibly be wrong? Because here's the thing about truth. When truth is challenged, it doesn't need you to defend it. Because it's true. Someone questioning truth will not make it untrue. If we believe that the gospel of Jesus Christ, the fact that he came, he died, he was buried, he rose again, and he did that to pay our penalty so that we could have access to the Father, so we could have a relationship with God, if we believe that to be true, we don't need to defend it. Because if it can be proven wrong, if it is not true, I don't want to believe it anyway. But when I look in Scripture and I see it again and again, and as I walk through my life and I see it play out again and again, as I see God enter into lives, change lives through the truth of the gospel, truth will stand on its own. So what are you holding on to that is keeping you from hearing something that Jesus wants to speak in your life? Will you let it go? Whatever that is, whether it's a sin that you are telling yourself, holding on to this sin makes me happy. I don't want to give this up because then I won't be happy. Whether it's a tradition that you're like, this is how we've always done it, this is how we must always do it. If I give up this tradition, I will have failed. Are you putting more faith in what you're doing than in the truth of the gospel? It can be anything, but it could just be something that you like. It's not a sin, but I like this so much. Is it your schedule? Is it something that is valuable to you that you don't want to give up? What is it? And will you let it go? And trust the stability, the truth, the foundational truth of the gospel of the eternal Christ, the one who existed before Abraham, knows better what's good for me than I do. And no matter how much I love the thing I'm holding on to, no matter how important I think the thing I'm holding on to, if the God who existed before Abraham is calling me to let it go, man, I better make like Elsa and let it go. Fast. Because he knows better. And the best way that I can encourage you to do this in a practical way, if you know what that thing is in your life, you know that thing that you've been holding on to, the thing that is your precious. Yes, that's a Lord of the Rings reference. Got to fit one in every time. If you know what that thing is and you need to let it go, the best practical way you can do that is to tell somebody. I find in my life that I can set my mind to change. But until I've told Carla that I have set my mind to change, I'm not serious about it. I have a video game that I've been playing for over 10 years. I love the game. That recently I started questioning whether or not I needed to let it go. And I told like 5 or 6 people, but every time I was like, but I haven't told Carla yet. It's not real until I tell Carla. Well, I told Carla, after this date, I'm done with it. If you have something that you know, it's time to let it go, tell somebody. Make it real. Let's pray. God, I thank you that my trust in you is trust in something that is more stable, more sturdy, more reliable than anything else in my life. Father, if there is anything that gets in the way of me trusting you, placing all my faith, all my eggs in your basket, would you remove that from my life? Father, as we seek to do that as a church, as we evaluate everything that we do day in and day out, if there's anything we do as a church that we have placed as more important than you and your mission, would you help us to let that go? Because we know you are best, and we want to surrender to you. Father, I pray in your son's name. Amen.